Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, we've talked all week regarding Packers-Giants about Odell Beckham Jr. and the Giants receivers and the Packers cornerbacks, but those aren't the only matchups to be concerned with, to pay attention to in this game. What are some others that jump out at you?
Well, I think it starts off first and foremost with the story that you wrote this week for Packers.com. When you look at Olivier Vernon taking on David Bakhtiari, the first time those two gentlemen will be seeing each other since that scorcher down in Miami in 2014. Vernon's a really interesting football player because he isn't your prototypical 4-3 dominant defensive end. 6'2", 275 pounds. Although that is, I pale in comparison to that. That's kind of par for the course for an NFL defensive end. So it's not like he's JPP where it's just this big physical specimen, but he's fast. He works hard. And I think more than anything, he really fits what they're trying to do in New York. And it seems that, that partnership after him leaving Miami has worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I talked to Bakhtiari briefly this week about that original matchup with Vernon down in Miami in 2014. Bakhtiari was just a second-year pro back then. Vernon was just a third-year guy, although Vernon was coming off a double-digit sack season in 2013. But both players now more mature at different stages of their careers. They both have new contracts. They're both being paid as elite players at their position. I think this is a really, really interesting matchup on Sunday night because in watching the Monday night game in Minnesota between the Vikings and the Giants earlier this week, for as poorly as the Giants played in various areas, I thought the guy who really jumped off the film, so to speak, was Vernon. I thought he was very disruptive. He was a very difficult guy for the Vikings to handle. And I think Bakhtiari has a tough task, but he's a guy who has stepped up to these tough tasks before.
Yeah, no question, Mike. And I think one thing that's really interesting, too, about what the Packers have done, let's start with the Giants, the defensive line. We talked earlier this week about the change in the makeover that they made on their defensive front.
Yeah.
It was Vernon. It was Damian Harrison. They're doing well starting out the gate. I think ninth right now in total defense, or I should say with run defense.
I believe third in yards per carry against the run. I mean, that's a pretty good statistic.
And that's where it starts for them. The point I was going to try to make originally is it's somewhat similar to what the Packers are trying to do in terms of being able to stop the run. Now you're doing it with a 4-3 versus a 3-4, but that's for both of those defense really the starting point. And the thing that's nice about Vernon, what he brings to the table, he's so athletic that he can be used in both capacities. He's really good against the run and setting an edge, but yet he also is quick enough to get around the left tackle and really cause some havoc as well. So with Bakhtiari and Vernon, both of their calling cards are their athleticism. I think that probably is going to make for one of the more intriguing matchups of this game.
Yeah, and another area to look at in this game, it looks like the Giants might be getting a little healthier in the secondary. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Eli Apple, two cornerbacks, have returned to practice, albeit on a limited basis. We may have to wait right up until inactives are announced 90 minutes before kickoff on Sunday night to know whether or not those two will be there or not. But I think regardless, either if they play, they probably won't be 100%. If they don't play, there will be backups and reserves in there. I think Aaron Rodgers challenges this secondary as best he can on Sunday night.
Yeah, no question. And Janoris Jenkins is a very good cornerback, and he's really the only healthy one in that rotation right now. But as you said, when you get into some of those reserves, that's where you want to see some of these second and third guys for the Packers really being able to make some headway. Because I'm sure that it's probably going to be a lot of Jenkins matching up with Jordy Nelson, depending on how that works out.
I would think so, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see. Now, Randall Cobb, you already know what he can do, but, Davante Adams and some of these other guys, can they beat their man and be able to maybe take advantage of that? Because you have to think, Aaron Rodgers, even though I know he said earlier this week that, he doesn't, just study the injury report religiously, but you have to imagine that he's aware of what's going on in New York, and that's not going to be a point of emphasis for the Packers going into this thing. Much like I'm sure for the Giants, without Sam Shields in that secondary, that's one thing that they're keeping an eye on as well.
Yeah, and you look at that, we talked about it earlier this week, that game on Monday night in Minnesota, for all the attention on Stephon Diggs and Kyle Rudolph and everything like that, when that game got tight, when it was 17-10, Bradford hit Charles Johnson down the field against a reserve cornerback for about a 40-yard gain, and it set up the touchdown that put the game away. Those are the matchups when you get a matchup like that, you have to be able to take advantage of it. And Aaron Rodgers is as good as there is in the league at finding those, and the Packers receivers have to beat their guy.
No question. And the Giants, you want to stop Stephon Diggs. Obviously, then Kyle Rudolph comes available. You have a guy that's a fourth-string, third-string type talent like Charles Johnson, the former seventh-round pick of the Packers.
Right.
Suddenly, he becomes a big play option. So there are those guys that you need to really develop in a game like this and really come out, and that's for both teams. That's going to be a big key for this one in terms of being able to establish that momentum early on.
Yeah, all right. Well, excuse me, more matchups to talk about. We come back after the break, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, and Wes, sticking with the preview here of Packers Giants coming up on Sunday Night Football. We haven't talked a whole lot about Giants quarterback Eli Manning. I did a little bit of research. Your Spoff stats and info moment. Did a little bit of research this week and found that Eli Manning has been a pretty tough customer for the Packers to deal with. Early in his career, had some rough outings against the Packers, particularly the December 26, 2010 game, I believe it was, the one that started the Packers' run to the championship.
Right.
He threw four interceptions here at Lambeau Field. It was not a good day for Eli and the Giants with their playoff hopes on the line. But since then, his last four outings against the Packers, he has a cumulative passer rating over 100. I believe it's 104.9, right around 105. And that's some pretty steady, impressive production. And he's won three of those four outings against the Packers. The only one that the Packers won in that stretch was the 38-35 last-second field goal shootout in New Jersey back in 2011,
right,
when the Packers were in that undefeated stretch of the regular season. So Eli Manning, a guy that really, I look at it as the Packers can't let him have another one of these efficient rating over 100 type of games. Otherwise, it could be a long night.
Well, let's be honest, too. I mean, you go back to when Ben McAdoo got to New York, not even just talking about him as the head coach, but when he came there as the offensive coordinator, the first thing he was talking about is that E word you just used, efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to see the completion percentage go up for Manning. He wanted to see the interceptions go down. Really, probably go into more of that mold of Aaron Rodgers in terms of how he manages the game at the line of scrimmage with a lot of no-huddle action. He has the intelligence to do that. He has the arm to do that. There's just always been occasionally, as you said, like that one performance with the four interceptions where there's been that blimp in the radar. But if you go back to these last four, he's certainly found a way to be that efficient quarterback that the Giants need him to be, because a lot of times in those matchups, maybe with the exception of that 38-35 game, it really has come down to a lot of defense. So it's about protecting the football and being able to really control the course of the ball game. And as you said with that game last week against the Vikings, he got the ball out incredibly quick.
Yeah.
It didn't work to their advantage, but you have to think, maybe it won't be as stringent, but that's still going to be the game plan for this thing, is getting the ball out fast and trying to make something happen underneath.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the statistics over the course of his career, Manning against the Packers, seven games total, and only twice in those seven games have the Packers sacked him more than once.
Yeah.
In a contest. He is a guy who gets the ball out of his hand quickly. And from a passer rating standpoint, I should point out that the 2007 NFC Championship in the freezing cold, the fact that he had a passer rating in the 70s but didn't turn the ball over, he obviously did what it took to win the game that day. So you don't lay it all on the numbers. But this guy is, for as immobile as he's not a scrambler. He
right.
doesn't take off and run like Aaron Rodgers. He is a tough guy to sack. It's tough to get negative plays against this offense, and Eli really thrives on sort of keeping his team in good position.
Right, and I thought it was a really interesting question that you had with Julius Peppers this week, and an interesting answer from him when you asked him about, obviously he hasn't seen him yet as a member of the Green Bay Packers, but he's had enough of those duels over the course of his career against him, about what stands out. And Peppers really couldn't put his finger on one specific thing,
right,
but he said he's one of the champions.
Yeah.
And the champions you always have to respect. He gets it done. And I mean, it may not be the same out of this world numbers that his brother had for the course of most of his career, but he's been a guy that just always has been there, and now making his 199th career consecutive start.
Yeah, isn't that something? 199.
He's available on Sundays, and in this day and age, for him to do that, I think is a testament to him, how his preparation has been, and also some credit to Archie and those genetics, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think the genetics do have something to do with it there. But, boy, what would that he would need roughly, what, 80 more starts to catch Favre? So,
yeah.
So that's another five seasons. So, yeah, if Eli can just last until 2021 without missing another start, maybe he'll break Favre's record.
If he comes within five, though, or something like that, the Giants are going to be kicking themselves for starting Kurt Warner at the start of the 2004 season. They should have just went with Eli right away.
Yeah, go with the rookie right away. but yeah, his longevity, his durability, and everything is remarkable. It's kind of a funny story. One, I don't remember which year it was, either 2012 or 2013, when we were in New Jersey, Packers were playing the Giants. I was down on the field with some of our other coworkers before the game. Actually, long before the game, and I walked up the tunnel. I was about to head up to the press box, and Eli comes walking by the other way. I never realized how big he's like 6'5".
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
you look at he's in there with all of his offensive linemen. You don't realize the actual size that this guy has. He's a big quarterback. He's a strong armed guy. He's got a lot going for him.
Yeah, there's a reason why. I mean, he was so coveted coming out of Ole Miss in 2004.
I mean,
he was the guy, and he was Archie's son, Peyton's younger brother. And I think the thing that's nice for him throughout the course of his career is he became Eli Manning, as two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback and a guy that has been there every day for the New York Giants and certainly for the Green Bay Packers, as Joe Witt talked about when he met with them. They're going to have their hands full with them, and they know obviously what to expect.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll keep talking about Packers-Giants and previewing the big game Sunday night. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, and Wes continuing the discussion of the Giants offense and Eli Manning. We look at the Packers defense. No Sam Shields due to the concussion still this week, but other than that, it looks like the Packers are getting back to full health defensively. A lot of the defensive regulars, really all the defensive regulars who missed the Detroit game in week three, with the exception of Shields, looks like they'll be back on the field Sunday night.
Yeah, it was a smart approach I think the Packers took with how they handled those guys going into the bye week. And certainly when you look at having Clay Matthews, Morgan Burnett, LaTroy Guy on Dayton Jones all back in the equation, Guy on actually was a full participant on Thursday, being able to show some improvement from when he was just limited on Wednesday. The only guy that was limited was Clay Matthews, and then when he met with the media on Thursday talking about how he's hoping to really be able to cut it loose against the Giants. So those are four big names, and they all have huge roles in this defense. So to be able to get that much back, as much as you still do miss Shields, that's certainly be a big plus for these guys going up against the Giants.
Yeah, and you wrote about it earlier this week on our website as far as the depth that the Packers are developing at outside linebacker, those pass rushing positions, and to get Matthews and Jones back to go along with Peppers and Nick Perry and Kyler Fackrell. Jayrone Elliott's another option at times. The Packers are really developing the depth, and options is the word I think Julius Peppers
right.
used when he spoke with the media. When you've got that many choices, you know, Dom Capers is sitting up there in the booth feeling pretty good about different calls he can make. He can rotate guys in and out, and it's keeping those guys fresh, especially for the big third downs and the fourth quarter stretch run in a game to get after the quarterback.
Yeah, and as I asked Capers about this a little bit earlier this week, because, I mean, in no disrespect whatsoever to Desmond Moses and Vic Soto and Andy Mullumba, and even, as you mentioned, Jayrone Elliott, the undrafted guys who have come in here and actually played major snaps for the Packers, that's all a bonus. But the thing is just how that there's been that transition in just maybe the quality of the talent. I mean, you're talking now about four former first-round draft picks, guys in Nick Perry and Dayton Jones that the Packers had really high hopes for and still have high hopes for, and I think you're starting to see some of the fruits of that labor. Jones is probably playing a little bit more of a traditional role of what his body type should be fit to. Nick Perry, I think we've always known what Nick Perry can do. It's just been a matter of getting healthy. And then, as you said, you look at the multitude of options. you can do different things with Julius Peppers now. You know, you don't necessarily have to push Clay Matthews out there as much if you don't want to with him coming off an injury, because you have a lot of confidence in the next guy. At the same time, it is a huge benefit to have Matthews. I mean, we saw that in that game against Detroit. A lot of that pressure they were able to generate on Matthew Stafford came in that fourth quarter. They really had to work towards it. You look at Matthews, he's a guy who can get right out there from the bat and really set the tempo in a game.
Yeah, Matthews is a tremendous difference maker on this defense, both against the run and pass. I still have that play in Jacksonville. It was like a toss sweep to the one side, right, and he just knifes through there and brings down the running back for like a 7-yard loss. There just aren't many guys in the league who can make a play like that. And Matthews is that type of guy who makes a difference. And he had kind of a funny line in talking with reporters at his locker on Thursday. He was asked about, with Nick Perry off to such a strong start, you know, do you think maybe some double teams will go his way instead of your way? And he's like, yeah, that sounds good to me. You know, send the double teams over there to number 53. But, you know, number 52, Clay Matthews, he's certainly faced his share of double teams, and I don't know if that's necessarily going to change. But you can't double team everybody. Mike Daniels, you leave Mike Daniels one-on-one, right, on a third down pass rushing up the middle, and you're asking for trouble there as well. So a lot of things for the a lot of chess pieces, you might say, for Dom Capers as he makes calls.
Well, and I thought you made a really interesting point in our pre-production meeting too. When you look at the double teaming process, and okay, you can only double team so many guys, and if you really want to overload with that, well, suddenly that helps out your secondary. So it really is a domino effect. There's fewer guys that they have to account for then. So it makes the offense have to make decisions in how they utilize their personnel. That's one of the benefits, I think, of how the Packers have structured this defense. It wasn't built overnight. This is something they've been working towards for the last four seasons now.
Absolutely.
But as Mike Daniels says so often when you hear him talk about this, there really is a different attitude. There's a different edge, and they're getting after guys. The penetration has been there, and it's working out both in the pass rush and also the success they've had defending against the run.
Yeah, and when you look at this specific matchup against the Giants, and we talked about Eli Manning getting the ball out of his hands so quickly against Minnesota, and I think part of the reason, or maybe the main reason, that was in the game plan is the Giants are really banged up at running back. They have young, inexperienced running backs who are back there to pick up the blitzing linebackers and whatnot. And if you can't trust those guys, then the quarterback has to get rid of the ball. Now, if I would expect the Packers maybe to challenge those running backs in blitz pickup, but then also, if Eli is going to continue to get the ball out that quickly, it puts a premium on tackling in the secondary. They can let him catch the short passes, but just don't let him break the tackles and get the big plays. And as we talked about, if the Packers can cut down on the big plays, that really will make a difference in this defense. And I think maybe on Sunday night, it really comes down to tackling.
In those third down situations too, keep an eye on Joe Thomas. See what that running back's doing in the backfield. If he's staying back in pass pro, Joe Thomas is going to be pinning his ears back. And he's been pretty effective at this year.
Yeah, you talk about cutting it loose. That could be a guy to keep an eye on. So, we'll send it to a break from there. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, to wrap up the week here, let's take a look briefly at the rest of the schedule around the NFL. A couple of really interesting AFC versus NFC matchups that involve teams that are off to good starts that the Packers will be facing coming up here within the next month. Cincinnati plays at Dallas, and Atlanta travels to Super Bowl champion Denver. The Cowboys and Falcons both on the Packers schedule here in the coming weeks, and they've got some interesting challenges here in week five.
They certainly do. I mean, that Falcons Broncos game has really gained a lot of acclaim now, because you don't know if Simeon's going to be available. Matt Ryan is throwing for 800 yards a week right now, it seems like, and it's a really good sort of juxtaposition with the Denver's defense and how they're performing so far this year, again, leading the league in sacks against the Atlanta Falcons, who have found a way, I think, to really build a nice up-tempo offense here early in the season. So that one's really intriguing for me to follow. I think the Cowboys game's interesting, too, because if you had the Cowboys without Tony Romo now going in 3-1 against a 2-2 Bengals team, I wouldn't have predicted that, as I probably wouldn't have predicted anything on this, you know, schedule so far.
Yeah.
But that's a kind of a must win now for Cincinnati, trying to get a, you know, an interconference game back and, you know, keeping in pace in that AFC, you know, division, AFC North. So it's going to be really interesting to follow. And certainly the ones that jump out to me the most are the two NFC North games with the Lions and Bears. Those are must wins against some interesting opponents.
Yeah, I think the Lions hosting Philadelphia. Philadelphia 3-0 coming off of the bye week. They were on the bye just like the Packers were, but probably the most surprising team in terms of those off to a hot start with the rookie quarterback and Carson Wentz. And the Lions now at 1-3, really kicking themselves. I'm sure they felt like they could have won at Lambeau Field when they were making that comeback. They came up a little short, but then they know they should have won that game in Chicago. They had multiple opportunities to score more points and to come out just on the short end there against the Bears. The Lions feel like they are almost in a must-win situation. If they fall to 1-4 and Philadelphia goes to 4-0, of course, that could be flipped. I think if the Lions beat the Eagles, they're right back in the conversation, even at 2-3. But you beat a quality team like that, it's going to make people pay attention.
Yeah, and the other side, you know, kind of headline to this whole thing is obviously Jim Schwartz going back to Detroit, now the defensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's certainly something I'm sure people will be following a lot of. But yeah, it is, they got to knock off the Eagles here to be able to stay in this thing. And the Bears, I mean, the Colts going into this thing 1-3, both of those teams desperately need a win as well. So that's going to be an interesting one to follow.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because two teams that are kind of going in opposite direction. The Bears got a big win over Detroit. Yeah. They needed it at home at Soldier Field last week, and they got it. Now they need to build on it. The Colts need to find a way to right the ship. They need to protect Andrew Luck. They need to get things going and get their all-pro quarterback back to where he should be.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we'll call that a wrap on the week for Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.